This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 2005, the United States government oversaw the boom of an increasingly rare and valuable element. There's a national reserve set up to protect America's supply, and it's used in MRIs and nuclear reactors and cryogenic science, though you've probably seen it most recently at a birthday party. It is helium, and it is not here to stay. Rosie Chima wrote the article, The Increasing Scarcity of Helium, for Priceonomics, and joins us now to tell us why those Mylar birthday balloons may soon be a thing of the past. Rosie, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thank you.
So when I think of helium, I do think of those Mylar balloons and the blimps that fly over ball games, but there are much more serious uses for it. What are some of them?
Well, a big one is its use as a coolant, because helium actually has a really low boiling point. When a liquid is kept at its boiling point, it never gets any hotter. It'll continue to boil and stay at that temperature forever. And so water always stays at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, so long as you keep it liquid. And helium actually stays at negative 452 degrees Fahrenheit, so long as you keep it liquid. So it's used to keep things cool that need to stay really, really cold. So it's used in arc welding, insulating superconductors and nuclear reactors, and then in cryogenics, which is a more obscure use.
And I guess one of the more common uses here is in MRI machines. How so?
That's right. So MRI machines have magnets in them that need to be kept cool. They use helium to insulate that.
How long have we been using helium?
We've been using helium for a little over a century. It was discovered in the late 19th century. And then in the early 1900s, we discovered that we could mine it, because the earliest helium was synthesized from radioactive minerals. But then we realized that we could extract it from natural gas, and that became a major American industry.
If we can extract it from natural gas, then why is there any fear that we'd run out? Is it considered a non-renewable resource?
Right. So helium is lighter than air. That's one of its selling points. And that means that once it's extracted, it just kind of floats away out of the atmosphere.
So you can only take out as much as you're going to use. So it's difficult to store.
It's definitely difficult to store. It's also very tiny. It's made out of two protons, right? It's one of the smallest atoms on the periodic table. So it can get out of most things. That's actually another one of its uses. It's used to detect leaks in things that need to be really, really well sealed.
There was a bit of a helium boom in the early 2000s, which did lead to concerns that we could run out of the supply within the next 100 years. How did helium become so undervalued?
That's actually a really interesting and pretty complicated story. When the extraction of helium from natural gas was discovered in the United States, the U.S. actually placed a lot of regulations on its export and started stockpiling it itself. I mean, it did have a lot of uses for the military and then in the space race. There were airborne aircraft carriers that were basically Zeppelins or dirigibles. By the 90s, the helium stockpile still existed, except present-day politicians no longer valued it, and it had been kind of mismanaged, so it was in debt, and they started selling off all of the helium that they could. And the goal was to sell off all of it by 2015, which meant that they were selling it off for extremely cheaply, like way below market value.
So where does it come from now? Who's got the world's helium?
I think that we still do, although more mines are popping up elsewhere. I think there's one in Qatar, or at least it's being developed in Qatar, and another one in Algeria. And then the reserve we did not successfully sell off by 2015, and Congress has passed a law to push that deadline farther back, and also try to bring the government price up closer to the market price.
So what was to happen in 2015?
In 2015, we were supposed to be done and the National Reserve would be shut down. And a lot of people were actually very worried about that, because the National Reserve still had a lot of helium, and it would have cut off one of the biggest supplies of helium in the U.S., or in the world, actually.
So we see these party balloons absolutely everywhere. It certainly isn't being treated like a scarce resource. But aside from those spiking in price, what would be the consequence of a helium shortage?
The cost of science would go up tremendously. It's anywhere that helium's used. So like nuclear power for one, MRI machines and like medicine for another, a lot of the physical and natural sciences.
Any kind of attempts being made to replace it, you know, create some sort of synthetic coolant that would take its place?
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of people experimenting with that. There's also, China's started to try to mine helium-3 from the moon. It's definitely a long-range plan.
Well, Rosie, thank you for telling us another thing to fear.
Yeah, as if we needed one.
Rosie Chima authored the article, The Increasing Scarcity of Helium for Priceonomics, and you'll find a link to read her article on our website. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. While helium is quickly becoming an endangered resource, the fact remains the kids will still be sucking on it at birthday parties, and Morgan Freeman and Jimmy Fallon will still have conversations while inhaling the element.
Do you ever want to go to space? I really shouldn't be doing this.
But why does it make us sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks? Joe Hansen is the host and writer behind PBS Digital Studios' It's Okay to Be Smart and joins us to talk about why helium makes our voices squeak. Joe, great to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the science behind this? Why does helium make our voice squeak?
So imagine like in a jazz band, you got a saxophone or a piano. They can play exactly the same note, like an A, and sound completely different. Musicians know that A is 440 hertz. It's a sound wave, cycles 440 times per second. But each instrument, in addition to that note, makes a bunch of other frequencies that we call overtones. And that's what gives each instrument its special sound. So our voices do the same thing, are full of overtones. When we suck in a big breath of helium, we change the speed of sound in our vocal cords because sound waves travel faster in lighter gases, and it shifts all those overtones to higher frequencies, and you end up sounding like Donald Duck.
Okay, I think I'm totally with you on this one. But inhaling a gas, that can't be very good for you, can it?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend this, speaking from a science or medicine perspective. Maybe just look it up on YouTube.
Well, Jimmy Fallon certainly does it with a lot of his guests. Could he do any permanent damage to his voice using inhaling helium?
No, it reverses after a few seconds. You can actually do the same thing with heavier gases that are a little bit harder to find. Those are really fun videos to find, too.
Yeah, so what would they do? Would they make your voice richer and deeper?
You'd sound like Morgan Freeman. It would be great.
And this balloon is filled with an extremely dense gas called sulfur hexafluoride. Now, sulfur hexafluoride has a density which is 5 times greater than air.
Okay, and as you can tell, my voice gets really low. Oh boy. Oh, I almost threw up on that one. So.
Well, Joe, thank you for explaining that.
Thanks for having me, and don't try this at home.
Joe is the host and writer of PBS Digital Studios' It's Okay to Be Smart. You can view loads of episodes at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us. Up next, we're going to hear about a group of scientists that is looking to make the periodic table of elements even larger by making elements of their own. That's after a short break when Word of Mouth continues.